Hey, welcome to the latest edition of the Big Pod Machine. It's been a while, so I hope you've missed us because we've missed you. It's just taken this long, quite honestly, to get any sort of handle on what and who this Cincinnati Reds team is in 2026. They were in first place through April. They were in last place 2 weeks into May. They've started winning series again. Who knows where they head from here as we go to June for the last two-thirds of the season. But here's Pat Brennan, my partner right here. I'm Gordon Wittenmeyer. Phil Didion, the greatest producer in the history of podcasts, is behind the scenes running this whole thing. And we're back. We're back for the duration now. So
we're back, baby.
That's right. That's right. And Pat, I'm going to go right to you, man, because I'm still trying to get a handle on what this team is. Is this team a playoff contender? Or are they a pretender in what might be the toughest division in baseball?
Gordon, I think, first of all, how are you? You've just come back from New York City. How are you doing?
You know, I ate a lot of pizza in New York City.
Did you? Good. You must have been hanging out.
I'm still recovering from the pizza. Yeah.
You must have been hanging out with our friend, the gold card carrying Mark.com Sheldon.
That's exactly right.
Yeah,
we were trading pizza stories. And we spent... You know what? You know, Mark's from, and when we say, MarkSheldon.com, he's or Mark.com Sheldon, there's a story behind that. And someday we're going to get Mark back on the podcast and have him tell you the story. I mean, he might have told it last time. He's from outside of New York City.
Yeah.
And so his favorite basketball team is the Knicks.
Oh, my God. That's right.
Yeah, we were there for game four when they swept the Cavs, and so I joined him at a local watering hole in Manhattan, Lower Manhattan, and it was pretty cool. It was pretty cool watching them clinch with .com and with the locals. So,
oh my God,
that was the Reds won a couple of games, but that might have been the highlight of just personally.
Wow, Gordon and Mark Sheldon out on the lash in New York for the Knicks clincher.
Hit the streets, my man.
Holy crap. All right, well, that's very interesting. We'll come back to Mark Sheldon's nickname story another time. To answer your question, Gordon, I do think the Reds are a contender, and they're in a good position right now. Three games over 500 going into as the calendar gets ready to flip from May to June. And I think that we have seen, you and I had talked on earlier episodes, past episodes of many moons ago, about the NL Central possibly being a division that was so strong that it cannibalized itself. I think we're seeing that happen. I think three of the five
cannibalized the Reds.
Well,
they're 2-10 in the division.
That's true. Look, the Reds, that's a separate issue. The Reds undeniably have a real tough time in this division, playing teams within the division. That used to feel like an issue reserved exclusively for when Cincinnati played the Milwaukee Brewers. And it still might be. They haven't played the
Brewers yet.
I know. So... Yeah, Cincinnati's got them. Yeah, the 2-10 against the division so far. That's a real problem. That could be a deciding factor if that doesn't get markedly better, if that doesn't get a lot better as we go along here. But look, Cincinnati obviously shot out of the gate with a torrid pace in May. They were 20 and 11 in the month of April. Got humbled very quickly in May with an 8-game losing streak. But that is the value. I have always thought this. This is kind of part and parcel with my theories that I won't bore you with right now, Gordon, because I know you don't need to hear them, because you've heard them more than anyone, about the wild cards and how...
Well, you and your damn wild card. How about winning a friggin' division?
I know. But... the value of starting off hot like the Reds did, part of the value of that, I should say, can be that when you go in the tank, and everyone goes in a slump at some point, you can absorb that. And the Reds did. And they've balanced out, I think, since the 8-game losing streak to begin the month. You know, they're not where they were record-wise, games over 500-wise, and they're trailing in the division by a few games. But I think they're in a fine spot. They're in what I like to think of as they're in pouncing position. They are one run away. If you tread water at this time of year, that's more than good enough. You are one run away from being in a playoff position. That's where the Reds are. And I think for reasons that I don't think we're going to get into today, they figure to maybe get stronger in some areas as we go. And I'm not ready to say that they – well, what I am ready to say today, Gordon, and that's what matters, this is a legitimate playoff contender that's going to take it down to the very end.
Well, the one thing I'll say to you is – well, I can't use that word. I'll give
is
you this.
Is this about the Reds or is it an insult directed at me?
Well, you can take it any way you want.
Okay. All right.
What I was going to say is, you know, when they went through that tough stretch, they were losing players left and right, particularly pitchers. The one way that they're going to get to the playoffs is the way they got there last year. With starting pitching. They still don't have as good of a fielding team by a long shot as a couple of the best teams in the division. Milwaukee and Chicago are terrific defensive teams. They don't have the type of lineup that the Cubs bought or that the Brewers have developed or that even St. Louis seems to have these days.
Yeah.
The Pittsburgh's starting to put together. They might compare with a couple of those teams when they're going good, but they've struggled as a group all season so far. So they really need that pitching to come together. So where I was going with that is that they've got Nick Lodolo back. He spent the first 6 weeks on the IL, and he's kind of looks a little closer to his old self now, four starts in to his season. So that bodes well for these guys if he keeps that up. Chase Burns is having a season off the charts. Andrew Abbott, who started slow, it has had a really good May. And really, if you go two starts in back into the end of April, a really nice stretch.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you've got Rhett Lauder, who was pitching well before his shoulder started having a couple of issues. Clicking, he called it. Yeah. Pain, they called it when they put him on the IL, but he's back. He looked really good in a simulated game the other day, and he goes out for a rehab assignment that might only be one start. And then you got maybe Hunter Green around the trade deadline. So if that pitching is coming together now and they get reinforcements at the trade deadline like that, certainly they got a chance. But the bullpen has looked like crap at times, honestly. And it's pitched a little better lately, but I mean, they were walking the world. And when you combine that with, not catching the ball particularly, you know, at an elite level, and they're doing better than they have in recent years, but not elite. And then you throw in the struggles of the lineup. It's tough. Hey, let me tell you something about this division. It's been 3 years since any division had all winning teams this late into the year. And that was, I believe, the American League East.
Yes.
And because they've reduced the unbalanced levels, the level of unbalance in the schedule. It used to be you'd play every opponent in your division 19 times.
Yeah.
That's down to 12 or 13.
Mm-hmm.
That's two fewer series that you're getting against somebody else. So if everybody in the division is up, that's two more series that they can go get from, you know, get some wins somewhere else.
Yeah.
That doesn't cannibalize the division. That suggests that in an era of division play, mathematically, if these teams really are as good as they seem to be, mathematically, this is possible. This could go all the way into September. And we've seen it happen in 2005, I believe it was the National League East had four winning teams and a 500 team. It's crazy.
Yeah.
In And you know what's even crazier? 1991, a seven-team American League West had six winning teams and a 500 team. So history says this has happened. It can happen. And I think that if nothing else, this division is going to play awfully tough all year long. So what it tells me, I know I'm kind of monologuing here, but one of the things it tells me is like maybe 83, 84, maybe even 85 games doesn't get you in to the playoffs this year like it has in recent years in the National League. I keep thinking of Seattle because look how good Seattle was last year. Arguably missed making the World Series by a pitch. And it's a team that's been strong for better part of, what, 5 years, 6 years, whatever it's been. And every year they come in at 88, 89, 90 wins. But they've missed the playoffs in that stretch more often than not with upper 80s wins. They had eight, I think they had 89 wins 1 year and missed the playoffs. I think that the National League is kind of like those American leagues where it's going to take more wins to make the playoff field because there's more good teams that have the opportunity and the talent to get closer to 90 wins. So they're really going to have to find a way to get on the accelerator and get their pitching all aligned quickly. And Pat, you know who's in town this weekend? Best team in baseball. And it's going to be a little bit of a litmus test.
Yeah. And I would venture to say that the pitching doesn't necessarily line up great for the Reds. But we'll have to wait and see how that plays out. But it will be a great test against the Atlanta Braves over the next three games. Gordon, I want to ad-lib a little bit, and I don't want to catch you off guard. I wouldn't ask this if I didn't think you were the man to ask and had the answers at the ready anyway. So if you don't mind, we're talking about this division. Who do you think has, in addition, like whether you, okay, so it sounds like you're out on the Reds long-term by the end of the season.
No, I didn't say that.
Okay.
I didn't say that. I think it's going to be a tough road.
Yeah.
Starting pitching is the most important aspect in the game. And if they get that where it should be, where it's been, they should be in this. I just don't think it's like, I think we might have thought it was more automatic with health, maybe more automatic coming into the season.
Sure.
Okay. It's not anything close to that.
That's all fair. And we are talking about the possibility of this division, all five teams potentially being good all the way through. I mean, that was the crux of the monologue you just delivered. But if I pressed you, and I'm willing to offer up my own responses here. Who do you think has real staying power in this division? If you had to bet, I bet we both think the Brewers are legit in it to the end, right?
I mean, God dang, how do you doubt these guys again?
I know. I feel like so silly for having done so. And I forget if I had them getting in by some means get to the postseason, but I totally doubted them. I'm guilty of that. Maybe we could go through team by team. I mean, the Cubs are the latest team to kind of go in a hole. I mean, they looked like world beaters at the start of the month, and they went in the tank a little bit. I don't think they're done. I imagine you don't either.
Yeah. So to answer what I think is your question, I mean, the short answer is I don't know, because there's all kinds of reasons. Like, I'll start with the Cardinals. Who the hell knows what the Cardinals are?
Yeah.
They were so young and unproven and coming off of losing season, and you felt like they were in rebuild mode. They still kind of feel that way, but they're getting the job done. They haven't had a losing record any day this season. It tells you, I don't know what it tells. I mean, we're one third of the way in. Are they eventually just going to fade? It's entirely possible. Or is this who they are? I don't know yet. I mean, we've only seen twice with all those rainouts, and it was a doubleheader. It was a goofy situation.
Yeah.
We'll know a lot more about them over the next several weeks. The Cubs are in serious trouble. Cubs on paper going in were easily the best team in the division. They had the payroll. They had the superstars. They went and got Alex Bregman. They traded for Edward Cabrera. It looked like they had pitching depth. It looked like they had bullpen depth. It looked like they had a lineup that could compete with anybody. And they've lost half their pitching staff to injury.
Yeah.
They're in bad shape. And, you know, when they were beaten up on the Reds in early May, they were putting together their second 10-game winning streak of the season. Second! Now they've got a 10-game losing streak. And I think where they are, that 10-game losing streak says more about them than either one of the 10-game winning streaks. So unless they go out and get more pitching, and I don't know where they get it, they could just muddle around and kind of fade. They'll have stretches because they have a lot of veterans and talent, but I don't think they have staying power without help at this point. The Brewers, they know how to win. Most of those guys were in the LCS last year. Murphy gets the most out of them. They can catch the ball. So if they pitch a little, it pitches like a lot.
Yeah.
So I think they have a chance to sustain. I think they'll sustain at some good, solid level. And the Pirates are interesting because if you just look at the Pirates' talent, it's immense. It's also very young. They're going to get Jared Jones back here not too long. And he's a really good young pitcher. So you look at the Pirates, they're going to get better. They're going to keep getting better. Now, is that getting better over the next couple of years? Or is that getting better over the next 4 months in particular? Because if it's the next 4 months in particular, watch out for the Pirates. And the Reds and the Cubs have already gotten beaten up by the Pirates. And so, when you start with Paul Skenes in your rotation, that's a pretty good start for any team that wants to try to win. I would be scared of the Pirates. I would feel confident that the Brewers are going to be there.
Yeah.
I don't trust the Cardinals. And I just think that the Cubs are just having too much bad injury luck to think they can stick around as it looks right now. The Reds are still in position, I think, to make noise. Now, they haven't played the Brewers yet. I mean, if they can win 6 or 7 of those 13 games against the Brewers, hey, watch out. But
yeah.
But the other thing is that while I think the Reds have a chance to get stronger as the season goes on, I do think they're going to need bullpen help. And look, I got my handy dandy Reds schedule printed out right here.
Yeah.
For anybody watching on YouTube, you can see it.
I know where this is going.
I don't have it circled literally, but I have it circled in my mind. Anybody that's got one of these, take a look at September. Because if you're the Reds and you don't make some serious hay between now and September, that could bite you in the ass. I mean, just look at it. San Diego, Milwaukee, at Los Angeles Dodgers, at Milwaukee Brewers, home against the Dodgers for 4, home against the Cubs for 3, at Atlanta, at Toronto to finish the season. That's September.
It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. The consensus seems to be that they're going to need some pad going into that stretch, that month.
Yeah, I would think so.
Yeah.
But then last September, it looked like they were dead like 3 times. And they just hung and hung and hung. And every time they'd lose 3, they'd win 3 or 4 and win 5 out of 6 or whatever. And what'd they win? What'd they finish the season? They finished on
83-79.
No, I mean, like how many games? Right down the stretch, they won like 7 out of 10 or I can't remember what, 5 out of... something. I can't
four
remember what it was.
4 out of the last 6.
But they
look good, but
that last 10 days or 2 weeks or whatever, you know, they won just enough. And then they lost on the last day of the season, and they had to wait for the Mets to lose. By the way, that Mets team is awful. I just saw those guys. They're terrible.
The losing and the booing
and whatever it is, they play like it's in their head. They know they suck or something. Yeah.
It's just incredible to me. It's just incredible to me because the money poured into that roster, and I know it's top heavy with who's getting that money. It's not like it's spread across all the, it is kind of spread around though too. When you think about it, just so much money wasted. It seems like a sad scene at Citi Field.
You know, and it's sad, you know, they've got a bunch of pitching injuries, and so they're patching stuff together by the time the Reds came to town. Reds should have probably swept. I mean, they left 17 guys on base in a 2-run loss in the finale. But, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda, you know, you feel good coming out of there with a series win.
Yeah.
And you know, the first two games weren't even close. But, you know, for even banged up for the talent that the Mets have, they just didn't play good baseball. Now, I know they got Bo Bichette playing shortstop instead of Lindor. But I leaned over to one writer toward the end of the second game of the series, and I said, "Is it me or does Bo Bichette look like he's playing in slow motion?
In the field,
you know, he's taking his time on double play balls, and they don't turn it. You know, I don't know, and I don't mean to single him out. You know, David Peterson didn't cover the plate on a throw home. The throw home was stupid. So I mean, they're just kind of a mess right now. The amazing mess. Meet the mess.
That's
right. Anyhow, so they caught him at the right time, if nothing else. So
hey, yeah, take that. And as you wrote, Terry Francona kind of owns the Mets a little bit since he took this Reds job. So you won't complain about that if you're a Reds fan.
Hasn't lost a series to him.
Right.
I want to get to something before I want to ask you something. We alluded to the struggles of the lineup. Do you realize, and this is something that will undoubtedly have a massive say in where the Reds go from here. Mm-hmm. They opened the season with TJ Friedl, who had a really good 2025 as their leadoff man, and Matt McClain, who had an awesome spring as their number two guy. And when he's hitting, he's sort of this ideal number two guy, the way Terry Francona puts together a lineup. And then you had Ellie, and then you had Stewart and Suarez, and that middle of the order really carried him early. But those two guys at the top, they're at the bottom now when they play at all. And they're bad. You know, Friedel's left-handed, obviously, and McClain right-handed. They've almost become kind of this domino effect platoon, right? Where like if one plays, he bats ninth and the other one doesn't play, kind of depending on the pitching matchup. That's the way it's been the last several games. And can they, in your mind, can they win without these guys producing? And what are you going to do about it if they don't come around? Just in full disclosure, I'm kind of putting this on a tee for you because go to Cincinnati.com and read Pat's terrific story out of Louisville. Anyway, go ahead, Pat.
Yeah. So look, it's tough when it's just tough right now with the way McClain and TJ Friedl are struggling. And I think when that happens, when you have two key pieces who aren't delivering, and I think Matt McClain, who people, even after he had he had a great spring. He was leading MLB in most of the major offensive statistics through Cactus League play.
He's got terrific glove. I don't think he's made an error.
Yeah, I mean, and there is still that, which is part of this whole conversation. What... I they've gotten to where they are with these two in the fold, although I think there have been times when they've been more productive than they have been recently. And as you said, they have been fading in the picture over the last 10, 14 days. So, Gordon, I think what a lot of people reach to in these situations is the minor league system and the farm system. And is there MLB-ready talent that could come up and help? And right now, there's a debate going on about whether Edwin Arroyo down in AAA with Pat Kelly, the manager in Louisville, and the Louisville Bats, if Edwin Arroyo could step in and be a difference maker for this team, for this Reds team. He's hitting 340 through 50 games in Louisville. That's after hitting 284 over basically a full AA season last year. And this guy's got a really advanced glove at shortstop. And that's kind of the problem here, is the Reds like Arroyo as a shortstop. And we know they're not averse to having guys change positions. Hell, they did it with Sal Stewart last year. After you saw him,
all those guys that came up in 23 were shortstops, right? Noelvi was, was a shortstop. McClain was a shortstop. Ellie was a shortstop. And they all wound up playing different positions on the infield. Ellie sticking
it's funny.
Short.
Brad Metter told you that they've basically gone through this with all of those guys. And now Edwin Arroyo is kind of the latest in the succession of what looks to be an MLB-ready bat, advanced glove at one position, and now...
All right, should they call him up? I'm going to put you right on the spot. Is this guy ready, and should he come up and play either third with Ke'Bryan Hayes on the IL or second because Matt McClain ain't hitting shit?
My answer
Come
is
on,
no.
Come on, man. You're the manager and GM for a
Look,
day. Where are you putting
I just
this
want to
guy?
Say, I wrote the story straight down the middle. My impression was that I don't think they want to bring him up. I think there's some hesitation there. I think when, you know, with Sal Stewart, and it's not dangerous, but you want to be careful about comparing the situations of different prospects because all these guys develop at their own rate and yada, yada, yada. But Sal Stewart and Matt McClain were different players. They were hitting as good as Edwin Arroyo's numbers have been, and his bat has progressed year over year from AA to AAA. That's really telling, especially with the way they play six game series in AAA. And, you know, there are like real time adjustments to how he gets pitched throughout a six game series. So the fact that he's handling
that. I really enjoyed that part of the story. That was an interesting thing I hadn't thought of.
Yeah. So the fact that he's adjusting to, pitching adjustments in real time over the course of by the end of the six games, he's getting pitched completely differently than when the season opened. And it's a higher level of pitching than he's faced on a consistent basis. So it stands to reason that the bat could be there. But, you know, as an organizational philosophy, the bat's manager, Pat Kelly, great dude, longtime Reds kind of farmhand down there helping them cull this talent. You don't want to, as an organizational philosophy, you don't want to promote out of necessity. Sometimes it does happen, but you want to avoid that when you can. And I just got the sense that they really like Arroyo.
You don't think they have necessity right now?
Dude, well,
I don't give a rat's ass about somebody else's organizational philosophy. I'm asking Pat the Man Brennan what he would do.
I would call him up eventually. I think he needs more time at second base and third base because he really has not played a lot at those positions. I know Sal Stewart hadn't moved around a lot either prior to his call up in September of last year. But I think Matt McClain, as good as a hitter, if I didn't make this point already, I want to make sure I make it here. As good of a hitter as Arroyo has been in AAA, I think McClain had better numbers when he was with the Bats. Sal Stewart just destroyed the International League in his short stay there. So those guys were better hitters than Arroyo. And I think you just want to give him a little more time. He's only played 15 games at second base. He's playing third base once a week for the bats. And we know he's not going to play shortstop here. That's at the heart of this, because you're getting everything you want and maybe more from Ellie De La Cruz right now. So unless it's about getting Ellie off his feet once a week or whenever, or God forbid Ellie gets hurt, Arroyo is not.
You can put McLean in.
What's that?
You have players for that. Arroyo would be the guy if you needed him for a week solid to start, or a week plus.
Yeah. I think the call is probably coming. I just think a little more seasoning defensively at second base and third base. He really has not played a lot of third, man. Like,
you know what? You know what?
I'll say by mid-June. Bullshit. By mid-June.
I want him up now. I want him up now against the Braves. I want to see if you can catch lightning in a bottle. And if you don't, he gets his taste. I think right now, with so much left in the season, for a guy who might have a chance to be an impact guy at some point, maybe even late this season, bring him up now. Bring him up now and see how he responds to the big leagues. You get him at home. And fine, you get him against the Braves, but you don't have your best pitchers going in this series. Like Chase Burns isn't going to pitch in this series. He's not taking the ball out of play for you. I'd put a glove out there. I'd put another glove out there. A kid with some energy, bring him up. Let's see what he's got. And you can tell him, hey man, this may not be for the long term. But we want to see what you got. And go take advantage of your opportunity. He's got Kansas City right behind that. Got a chance to do something there. And then you can see what you got. You got a big road trip in St. Louis and San Diego coming up. Man, I tell you what, I want to see what this kid has. And right now the stakes aren't September high stakes. And let's see what he's got. And
those are all really good points. I will give.
It ain't going to hurt. What's it going to hurt? You sit a 150 hitter or whatever it is. So what?
Yeah.
So what if he doesn't hit at all? The spot in the order you're going to put him in isn't hitting at all anyway.
Right.
Maybe he catches a couple balls. Maybe he says, holy crap, this game moves fast in the regular season in the big leagues. Okay, now when I get sent back down, I know what I'm dealing with.
Yeah.
And that can't hurt. And by the way, this guy played on a WBC, man. This guy played high stage with some really, really good friggin' players.
Yeah.
And so he's got a little bit of a taste already. I'd like to see what he's got.
I will concede all those points to you. And I will also concede that going back to spring training, there was, I think, out in the media tent in Goodyear, Arizona, at the Reds Player Development Complex, we would talk. What's that?
Our luxury tent.
That's right. We would talk about the need to, at some point, you do have to see what Arroyo's got. He's only 22. The kid doesn't turn 23 till August. But based on where his skills seem to be at, you do want to get a sense of what he can offer you, and probably do that sooner rather than later. I'll just tell you, I'm just going to tell you, I think Pat Kelly said to me, I quoted him in the story as saying this, he really liked, I think Edwin wanted to come up, he wanted to get the call last year when he was in go straight from double A to playing for the Reds. And Pat Kelly was really happy, not just that they didn't promote him to the Reds, which I don't even know how much that was on the table, but that they kept him in Chattanooga for the entire double-A season and didn't force him to change things up midstream, especially coming off a shoulder injury that has been loosely compared to me to what Matt McClain dealt with around the same time. I think that look, the sense that I got from talking to these guys, and that's part of what's going into my opinion here, is they like him as a shortstop, man. They like him as a shortstop. But obviously, that's not going to be an option right now. because you have an all-star. Hey, you have a bona fide. You have a bona fide all-star, like a real all-star now. Like the way Ellie's been fielding the ball, I've never been higher on Ellie. You are getting everything you would probably want, I think, reasonably, for a guy of his build and the mechanics that go into the way he swings and the way he fields and throws the ball. You're getting everything you could want from him. Obviously, yes, room for improvement, blah, blah, blah. He's a bona fide all-star. That blocks that pathway for Edwin. The Reds told him when he got back from the WBC, you need to be ready at second and third base to maximize your pathways to a call-up. So the Reds have been planning for this, and I think it's a matter of when they feel comfortable with the glove at those different positions. And, hell, yeah. Gordon, I don't like to put too much of a time element on when we're recording so the thing doesn't become dated. There's enough time left in this day that maybe we get a text this afternoon. And I don't know that that's coming, but who knows? Maybe Edwin's in town. I don't freaking know, man.
Let me check my phone here. Okay, nothing yet.
Yeah, right. It's still early enough in the day.
All right, well, I mean, if I was in charge, you'd have had the text this morning.
Right. I'd be at the ballpark right now talking to him in the Rob Butcher.
Tito's been pulling every other damn lever in this lineup. Well, yeah. And I don't know where they'd be without guys like Blade and Lowe and Dane Myers.
Yeah, yeah. Look, do you agree the Reds have been really, I don't know if good is the word, but they've been fair to guys like Friedel and McLean?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, but you know, there's some sort of baseball traditional truisms, I guess, that go into that. You know, and Tito sometimes talks about it, you know, especially a guy like Friedel, who had a full season last year of doing it. Well, he was hurt the year before. He looked good in 23. This is a guy that can do a lot of things for you. He fits up there real nice. Nice left-handed back, can bunt for a hit, which he did in New York.
Yes.
And so, you know, from Tito's standpoint, a guy like that, you don't bail on him after 2 weeks. You give him a month plus 6 weeks, and then maybe he ticks down the lineup a ways before you give him that blow and say, you know, hey, you need 2 days on the bench, or I'm going to rotate some hotter bats in for a while. And they had that talk. They had that talk. Yes. When was it? A couple weeks ago in Cleveland.
Yes, they did.
And so, this is where they're at with him. Yeah. I think he's been, and apparently, you know, by all accounts, Friedel handled it well. And, you know, and this is one of Tito's strengths as a manager. He's such a good communicator, and he genuinely likes these guys. Yeah. And he's trying to put them in the best position to succeed as well. So apparently all that messaging got through to Friedel, and he's not, you know, nobody's happy with struggling or not being in the lineup, but he gets it. Yeah. And McLean's always had a good head on his shoulder when it comes to this. I don't know where he goes from here. But this is what I'm saying, man. You're pulling all these levers. You're trying to see what you got. You need to know what you have. And I think Arroyo's in a place where give him a shot. I mean, you're not bringing him up to say you're our future and the future starts now. You're saying here's an opportunity. See if you can run with it. And you know, it's because of where the team's at. This is an opportunity for you, you know, and even if you do well and have to go back down, it's going to be good for you and maybe it'll be good for the team. So that's how I would approach it. That just based on where this team is right now, I don't know what the corresponding move would be. We could get into the weeds on that, and some guys on the roster might not like what it would be.
Well, I think that's part of the calculus that's really tricky, because you're talking about potentially now there are some guys on the bench whose names I've heard associated with this could be move that wouldn't be as shocking. But, you know, you're talking about potentially displacing a established veteran, everyday Reds player, I think, in some of these scenarios. And, you know, that's going to send that has the potential. Yeah.
Are you talking about McClain? Because look, you know how much I love Matt McClain. When he's hitting, what a ball player. And he's always a great ball player in the field. And just the way he carries himself, his personality, I'm a big fan. I like him a lot. That said, he's not hitting like a everyday big league player right now. It's just not happening, no matter where you put him in the order. And if we're honest with ourselves, he had 3 months in 2023 as a rookie where he really raked and looked the part. He was hurt all the next year. He came back last year and for most of the season struggled. Yep. He has struggled almost all of this season so far. Do we even know who Matt McClain is as a big league ball player? Well, I don't think it's fair to say we know that yet.
Tito talks about guys getting to their level and finding the average numbers on the back of their baseball card. It's not to say that Matt won't have a good level at some point in his career. I don't know what that level is today. Like to look at Matt McClain and say, that's the Matt McClain we've been waiting for. I mean, other than hitting the ball like he did for 3 months in 2023, almost 3 years ago now. What do you think that level is? What is it?
What it should be is something in between what we saw last year and what we saw in 23. Now, when a guy comes up and they didn't have a book on him when he came up, right? I mean, nowadays, you know, you get a pretty decent scouting report on all the, you have video on all the minor league games and things like that. So you get some idea who a guy is, but you know, he jumped the league when he came in. I mean, he jumped the pitching around the league when he came in 23. So was that, did they adjust back and he just hasn't adjusted since then? I mean, you got to think he's healthy now. Maybe last year was partly the shoulder, the first year back from the shoulder. But how do you explain this year, especially after spring training? And Tito talked about mechanically, he's kind of playing catch up on some of the pitches. And so it's hard to hit with authority. What he should be is a gap-to-gap hitter and with maybe 15 to 20 home run power and maybe 30 to 40 doubles, you know, and that and enough speed that you know, he's going to get an infield hit once in a while, or, you know, he's going to beat out double play balls, and he's just going to be consistently better than he is now. That's what he should be. I mean, I loved the swing when he came in, that thinking, you know, this guy that can put the ball in play and because he's got some wheels that is going to bode well for him. Plus he's got some power.
Isn't there something you say when he does something positive at the plate?
No. But for a guy that's not, you know, huge in stature, you know, he really does, he can do some big things. And so, you know, you just would like to see more of it. And like I said, you know, personally, I'm a big fan. So, as writers, as beat writers of teams, you know, there's a bunch of people that think we should be fans. Other people think we shouldn't be, but are fans. We're not fans. If we're doing our jobs correctly, we're not fans of the team. We have no stake in whether they win or not. We don't get a playoff share if they make the playoffs. But you can't help but appreciate not only what they do at a big league level across the board, but also certain guys. And this clubhouse has a bunch of them.
Oh, yeah.
But you do become kind of fans of people. And over the years, there's I got a pretty good list of people that I'm a fan of that I've covered just because, you know, they're good guys. They get it. Or the way they approach the day, the things they do. And McClain's on that list. So personally, I'd like to see him do well. You know, professionally, as I sit here looking at it with my perspective, I don't know what's next for him, and I don't feel any certainty evaluating him right now.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking to the rooting for individuals part of it, until the Baseball Writers Association of America welcomes a robot into our ranks, I think that's always, I hope that's always part of
it.
Hey,
I think, hey, they might be walking among us now, dude.
I know.
Hey, who knows,
and, dude? And we don't get a playoff share. I hope the Inquirer got something of a playoff share for the bump in web traffic from the two games in L.A. last year. I hope that's something.
You know, all those stories, all those extra stories we wrote,
yeah,
the section and stuff. We
I
put
hope
out.
That was a. I hope that was a playoff share for someone.
It wasn't for you and me.
Oh boy, woo boy, getting racy here on the Big Pod Machine.
All right, well, okay, maybe we should wrap it at that point.
Yeah.
That's a good note to go out on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I don't know, Gordon. Hey, it's great to talk to you again here on the Big Pod Machine. I have missed talking to you on these. I love this dialogue. And we're going to try to keep it going through the summer, are we not?
Yeah, we've got a little bit of a handle. Let's see if we can keep figuring this team out. Every week for the rest of the way. So please stay tuned to us. Please look for us, because we will commit to this every week. Now we're in the full swing of things now, and so watch for our next one next week. For now, for Pat Brennan, my partner, and Phil Dion, our terrific producer, and myself, Gordon Wittenmeyer, thanks for listening and watching today, and we'll be back with more, much more, of the Big Pod Machine 2026 edition. Thanks. Take care.